Jack Stein, Spike O'Neill, Mr. Allergy Season himself. Isn't that right?
Buddy, I got to tell you, I've got a wife and two daughters who are so crippled with allergies. I don't know how, I don't know what I did in a previous life to spare myself from allergy suffering, but I've never had an issue.
It is awful.
I feel for you, man.
I am living in a kind of, you know, it's like Dante's Inferno. I'm at like the fourth or fifth level at this point.
Ouch.
And you shall be my proverbial Virgil, Spike O'Neill, as we descend as we descend into the Equity press release from King County. This report saying the county is making positive progress on equity, but ambiguity on responsibilities, lack of accountability hinders efforts. Now, Spike, when we got this report from the King County auditor, I said that this was a bunch of woke gibberish. I went off on this. I said that this is a bunch of nonsensical legalese so that the county can submit this in case that they get sued. And then you said, much to my chagrin, that this was a valid audit and that we should take it very seriously. Is that a fair summation of your argument?
Yeah, I think so. I spent about a year involved in this type of work prior to returning to the radio. I was working for an organization that was tasked with measuring equity in the way of energy resources in the city of Seattle. And I bring that up, and I'll give you a little bit of backstory and tell you why I feel the way I feel, what I found after looking into this pretty in depth.
Okay.
So first off, you should know that King County and City of Seattle particularly has what they call an equity toolbox. And what that is, and it was proposed, I think, under, I forget which mayor, it might have been Nichols, but it was within the last 6 years, 7 years, that any new legislation promoted or proposed in King County or City of Seattle would have to be examined from a perspective of either benefiting or at least doing no harm to communities of color.
That's pretty vague.
That's fair to say that it's vague. So to say that proposing laws that would hurt communities of color shouldn't be allowed, is that a different way to frame it? Is that an okay way to frame it?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I'll supplement your argument with this. There was a county in North Carolina that was attempting to require certain residents to have IDs if they wanted to vote, and it was found that in this particular county, which was 73% African-American people, that about 50% of that 73% did not have IDs. And so it went to the court system. And the judge said that this county had been targeted with, quote, surgical precision against members of the African-American community to prevent them from voting.
Right.
So I can see why someone might say we don't want to have laws that are going to directly affect, negatively affect members of certain communities, because there have been instances like this in the past. I could see that argument.
Right. And that's what all this audit says, is that we are making progress in programs to promote equity, but we lack accountability. We have ambiguity of responsibilities. Let me tell you why what I found bears this out to be completely true.
Can I read this? Can I read the thing real quick so people know? Okay, so this is the language that I took exception to. And so, Spike, you know me, I'm a straight shooter. As a matter of fact, Andrew knows this. Whenever we see each other in the hallway, we give each other the guns. And we go, shooter, and we shoot at each other. Right, Andrew?
I do that to everybody in the building, not just you.
I thought it was our special thing, man.
I'm pointing my finger guns at everybody.
When he says everybody, he means everybody but me, apparently, because I've never, not once. There it is.
Okay, so a new report released Tuesday by the King County Auditor found that while the county has taken great strides towards improving equity and social justice, those efforts may be undermined by ambiguity around roles and responsibilities and a lack of accountability for the success of programs. It goes on to say, the latest audit reviewed the status of equity structures and processes across the county with a focus on the Office of Equity, Racial, and Social Justice. Auditors assessed the extent to which the county's equity structures and practices aligned with leading practices across the nation. This is not straight shooting, Spike O'Neill. This is jargon.
It is.
This is woke jargon. And if you can't explain it to a 5-year-old what exactly it is that you're doing, you are wasting everybody's time. pardon me for my rant, my aside. I'll just wrap this up really quick. It says, King County is demonstrating robust commitment to equity, racial, and social justice. As Kimber Waltmussen is a King County auditor. The county is on its way to fulfilling our recommendations to make equity efforts more effective and transparent. This is what I would hear when I was in my second year of my political science degree,
okay,
from people who didn't know what they were talking about societies and cultures, so on and so forth. This is like wannabe progressive jargon. Thank you, Spike. I'm done.
That's okay. No. I appreciate your take. Then keep in mind that this report wasn't for the general public. This was for administrators and elected officials. And let me give you the example that I quoted about why this is true and important. So we were looking specifically at the elimination, and I've mentioned this before, the elimination of natural gas as an energy resource in King County.
Okay.
Now, the King County Council, King County has this equity toolbox, meaning that any proposed legislation, such as the removal of natural gas as a resource, must be viewed through the filter of, does this disproportionately harm communities of color?
Okay.
So when you look at the elimination of natural gas, the entire city will then rely on hydroelectric generated power. Market rules they just dictate that power rates are going to go up when everybody goes on the same power grid and alternatives. 30% of King County is gas. When that's gone, everybody pays more for electric power.
Okay.
Now, now utilities account for a much larger percentage of the budget of a minority or a lower income community than the general public, right? I mean, if you make $100,000 a year and your electric bill's $400, it's no big deal. When you make $35,000 a year and your electric bill's $400 a month, it makes a much bigger deal, effect. So now, when King County found out they couldn't propose this because of this commitment to equity they'd made, they went about through building coding, and had this passed through a different means that bypassed the requirements they put in place to ensure equity. That's what I'm saying. There's ambiguity of responsibilities. There's lack of accountability.
I see.
When they say they find these things, I found it firsthand to be true that that's exactly what was experienced in King County with relation to energy prices.
Okay, that is a fair argument, Spike. And had this been written in that way, a nice summation so that a five-year-old could understand it, I would be fine with it. My objection to this is that it's so loaded with language.
Oh, yeah.
It is so loaded with jargon that any kind of John or Jane off of the street who tries to read this is going to say, what are these people talking about? They're basically speaking like, I've got friends who are programmers who, they work for Google, for tech companies. When those guys get to talk in jargon, it's like I get into a hypnotic trance. I start drooling. I'm like, what are these guys talking about? It doesn't make any sense. It's the same thing to me when people start throwing out terms like equity structures and practices aligned with leading practices and so on and so forth. It just seems so redundant and unnecessary that they are padding what is otherwise a very simple idea. We don't want new policies to disproportionately affect minority communities or poorer communities. That is a nice way to say that.
No, you've nailed it. And you, I wish you were involved in writing government reports in response. And I wish it was you. And the sad part is the summary you read, that's the elevator pitch of a 97-page report.
Right, 97 pages. That's correct.
I mean, you gave that. They sent us the abbreviated version, and that was gobbledygook.
Right. So I will charge, I'll give a discount. It'll be $500 an hour, which is, the going rate for my talents. And I'll just clean all this up and we'll make it so much better. But I think the county needs to realize that although this might look good to people within their own little circle, a guy who's, a foreman on a construction site who's like, well, what's going on at King County and why are we getting audited? He's going to read this and he's going to go, what do I care? This is woke nonsense, right? This is woke garbage. What do I care? And this is the importance of making language not necessarily simple, but comprehensive for people, and not loading it in such a way so that it excludes 90% of the population who don't even really know what equity practices might mean.
True,
in application.
True. Right? We're lucky they didn't write it on parchment with a quill. It's so damn frilly. This thing should be behind glass in a museum that school kids can go, ooh!
All right. And speaking, by the way, of things being behind glass, there's this interesting report. So we've been talking about the Trump arrest now, because I was promised, Spike O'Neill, by one Donald John Trump, that he was going to get arrested on Tuesday. Apparently, he's raised $1.5 million over the last 4 or 5 days. And now the Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, has come out and he's said Trump has created a false expectation of arrest. A false expectation of arrest. And so my thought on this is that you were exactly right, Spike, when you said yesterday that Trump threw the ball out there and a lot of people jumped on it, myself included, and we all thought it was going to happen, when in reality, the mechanism hasn't even necessarily kicked in yet. And then I was reading, Spike, that even if the guy does get arrested, it will likely be unbelievably private because he is a former president of the United States. So he'll likely get, if it even does happen, they'll bring him into the building. He'll do the fingerprints. He'll get the picture and big bada boom. They'll take him right out of the building. Probably very few pictures involved with the whole ordeal.
Right? It's exactly right. Much to my, disbelief, maybe.
Okay.
But they are treating, and they should appropriately. They're using the proper amount of respect and caution in coordinating with President Trump's Secret Service protection, the police department of whatever municipality he is in at the time, whether it be New York City or whether it's Florida, whether whoever is involved, coordinating so that it isn't a media circus, which was what the DA's office wants. They don't want a media circus.
Right. Well, but maybe they do, though.
I don't know if they do, but I know somebody does, but it might not be them.
So on Monday, 3 Republican committee chairmen in the U.S. House of Representatives went on the offensive against District Attorney Alvin Bragg, a Democrat, accusing him of abusing prosecutorial authority and seeking communication documents and testimony from him. So now we're going to investigate the investigation of the investigation of one Donald Trump. The inception of investigations that we have now. As of Wednesday, a grand jury hearing evidence in the Stormy Daniels case had yet to issue an indictment. And on Thursday, Bragg's office sent the committee chairman a letter seen by Reuters, where basically he came out and he said that the chairman's accusations against him only came after Donald Trump created a false expectation that he would be arrested the next day. And his lawyers reportedly urged the committee chairman to intervene. So there's a lot of infighting about this now,
right?
Where it seems like this was all, like, you, I think you kind of called it, Spike, that Trump was looking to orchestrate a kind of a media frenzy around him based on limited information.
At least a narrative.
It allowed him
to, I mean, anybody will tell you who's in PR, control the message.
Right.
I mean, I found out yesterday, I read in the New York Times yesterday, that the reason those three committee chairmen wrote a letter to Bragg was because the attorney for Donald Trump wrote a letter to those three committee chairmen saying you shouldn't look into how this New York district attorney is overstepping his bounds and coming after my client. The New York Times published that letter yesterday.
Okay, yeah, and this is where it just gets so gross, right, Spike? I mean, when people talk about the seedy nature of politics, this is the kind of thing that I think about, this kind of house of cards, committees investigating DAs. But at the same time, as someone who loves politics, the kind of pervert in me that just loves this kind of stuff.
Me too, man.
You know what I mean? It's better than any fiction anybody could write, you know what I mean?
Well, it is. The problem is it's not doing any governing. That's what just breaks my heart at this. I mean, we all love the blood sport of politics, but the blood sport of politics gets in the way with the efficiency and the benefit of governance.
Yeah, and I think it also, there is a percentage of the population, I'm going to say it's about 10% of people who are reactionaries, and they are maybe not the most emotionally stable of people. And so when I look at the things that they write about one Donald Trump and then the things they write about one Alvin Bragg, I mean, I saw threads on Reddit and on Twitter yesterday that were pictures of Alvin Bragg next to a noose. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
There are people out there who they don't necessarily understand the nuances or the complexities of law. They just understand Trump good, Alvin Bragg bad. And so they put a picture. I saw another image just as an example. Someone had taken or they had photoshopped Donald Trump's face onto the scene from Heat when they're after they've robbed the bank.
And so it's
Donald Trump's face on Al Pacino with the AR-15.
Yeah.
And then it's Alvin Bragg getting hit in the chest with, you know what I mean, with the bullets. And so I see that And many people think, well, that's freedom of speech, and I would agree with you. But there's something behind the intention of a human being who wants to take hours out of their day to find an HD image of that scene from Heat, superimpose Donald Trump's face onto it, and then find the opposing frame where, I forget the actor's name, is getting shot in the chest, and then put Alvin Bragg's face on that. That takes, as someone who uses Photoshop, that's not like, you know, 10 minutes for the LOLs. That's a good, you know, you're spending a good 45 minutes to an hour to color match and, you know, the saturation rates to get an image of that quality. So this is what I'm saying, that although Trump's intention might have been to control the narrative, the byproduct of this is riling up insane people.
Yeah, it is.
It's riling up people who are deeply mentally ill, who don't necessarily want to read a couple thousand words at Yahoo News, or they don't want to read anything about, you know, the process that goes into arresting a former president of the United States. They just think Alvin Bragg bad. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene fell into this when she was saying that he should be arrested immediately, she said, by federal police. For what crime, you may ask? Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
He should just be arrested.
And now you know why the New York City Police Department,
yeah,
the Secret Service, yeah, are all so committed to making sure that this is handled as professionally and respectfully as possible from a perspective of safety, both for the former president, who deserves every bit of respect and protection, and the, and protection by the law,
yeah,
as any other American citizen does, and as do the people of New York City, or the people who support Donald Trump. They deserve peace and the ability to gather in public and protest what they feel is an unjust situation. But it does, this kind of thing doesn't help in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair way of putting that, Spike. I think that's a good fair shake to one Donald Trump and his supporters. I think most people want to have a kind of a peaceful interaction with this whole experience. And when you're going out there and you're riling people up who may not be have their head, you know, firmly affixed to reality, I think there might be, you know, consequences to that kind of speech. Speaking of consequences, by the way, I found out yesterday that Dick Van Dyke is still alive, and I am now embarrassed that I thought that he had transpired.
Don't feel bad. He's almost 1,000. It was a safe assumption to make.
I read this story, and I felt so bad. I was so embarrassed. I was physically cringing in my home by myself. Find out how I found out that he is still alive when we get back right after this. Spike, I rarely get embarrassed. I'm not really one to, you know, I don't make a lot of mistakes.
Well, that's a sign of confidence.
Let's just be honest here.
Yeah.
I am right about 98% of the time, and I live my life almost as close to perfection as any human being could possibly live it. However, there are some things that are outside of my knowledge base. Very few things. And
you
one
know,
of them...
Nobody's perfect. Don't be hard on yourself.
Thank you. One of those things is the status of one Dick Van Dyke. Now, if you had asked me the day before yesterday, is Dick Van Dyke alive? I would have said, no, he died in, what, 2005, 2006? And then I found out yesterday on Twitter that Dick Van Dyke was in a car accident yesterday. And two things went through my mind. One is Dick Van Dyke is alive.
Right.
but then two, how old is Dick Van Dyke at this point? He's 97 years old. Dick Van Dyke is a huge part of my childhood. You know, everything from the Dick Van Dyke Show to Mary Poppins, everything the guy touched was in my house when I was very, very young, when I was
sure,
a kid, because it was considered, you know, kid-friendly content. And so when I found out that he was still alive, I was simultaneously very happy, but then also very sad and embarrassed that I had no idea that this guy had, who had a huge impact on my life as a child, I did not know. I was ignorant to the fact that the man was still living and breathing and ambulating. So law enforcement sources tell TMZ that police responded to a call of a single car accident last Wednesday morning. When police and deputies arrived, they found Dick Van Dyke behind the wheel of a 2018 Lexus LS500, which upon a quick Google search, Spike, is about a $76,000 car. So obviously he's doing quite well for himself, and he crashed into a gate. It's been raining a lot in LA, so he lost control before slamming into the gate. He had some mild injuries, but he'll be okay, is the long and the short of it. But I got to ask you guys, is there a person in history that you guys thought was alive, or you thought they were dead when they were in fact neither? So for me, just as another quick example, for many years I thought that Gerald Ford was still alive for some reason. I thought that Sean Connery was still alive. So there's, I got a bit of a reoccurring theme here. Do you guys have anybody that you thought was dead or alive, but in fact they were the opposite?
I got to tell you, they are dropping so fast. I don't mean any disrespect. It's heartbreaking. Sure. They're dropping so fast now. When I saw Angela Lansbury pass away a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
I'm the same way. I'm like, oh my, she was alive? I thought she passed away in 2012. I love you.
Yeah.
Dick Van Dyke is 97.
Right. And he looks great, by the way. I got to say that. The picture of him, he still looks like Dick Van Dyke. He still looks he's still got the sparkly blue eyes. Looking good.
You know, it's funny. I sent you a picture of Dick Van Dyke from the Mary Poppins movie, which was a part of my life, too. And Chitty Bang Bang and the Dick Van Dyke Show. And the guy was a part of our world. And I honestly, too, had lost track of whether he was still with us or not. I think he crashed the car to get some press, personally. but the fact that he's driving a Lexus at 500 at 97?
Yeah.
I think that's the dangerous news here.
That's an entirely different conversation.
I felt the same way when I found out Biden had a Corvette. I'm like, you're letting that guy drive a Corvette? Are you nuts?
Yeah, that image of him driving the electric-powered Ford where he almost ran over those reporters.
Yes.
That was one of the scariest things I've ever seen in my life. Chris Martin. You got anybody that you thought was dead or alive, and then it turns out that they were actually the opposite?
Yeah, did you know Anne Margaret is still alive?
No.
I didn't know. Well, see.
It's always whenever somebody dies in the news that's old, and that's the thing. They've been out of the,
right,
the circuit for 20 years, so it's. I'm always like, whoa, they're still alive? But yeah, I can't believe Anne Margaret's still alive.
She is 81 years old, and good for her.
Wow.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. And she looks great. She looks wonderful. This is fantastic news. Andrew, what about you? Anybody that you thought was alive and or dead that is not?
Alan Alda. I'm surprised he's still alive.
He's still around. The Hawkeye's still around.
In MASH, he seemed like he was pretty, he was kind of middle-aged at that point. I'm like, goodness. I don't know.
I used to be able to do a mean Alan Alda. Like a really, I'd have to listen to some audio clips to be able to do it again. But
really?
There was a while there. It was somewhere like I would hit this like really this golden range of heroin and cocaine intoxication, where I could do an Ira Glass from NPR like it was identical, and then I could do an Alan Alda. But sober, it's a little bit more complicated. But yeah, that was my secret talent when I was under the influence. Hey, Andrew, you got that ding for us really quick for people who are playing Jack Stein Bingo today? Thank you very much. That was your drug addiction reference for the day. The most embarrassing moment I had, I think, on radio is when this has got to be 5 years ago, maybe, doing that drive time show. And I just said out loud, we were talking about presidents and presidential figures. And I said, isn't it crazy that Gerald Ford is still alive? I said it with such confidence. I said it with such amazing confidence. It turns out it was not. I was off by about 8 years at that point in time, which was very sad for me.
Well, I was amazed. I saw a TikTok video with Carl Reiner and Rob Reiner. And I had no idea Carl Reiner was still around.
Wow, really? Wow, yeah.
And they were talking about what makes the comedy spark. Are you born funny? Because they were talking about the multi-generational.
He did die, though.
In
2020. Mel Brooks is still alive, though.
See, even when TikTok's is a liar.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. It was an old piece of tape.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mel Brooks is still around. See, Jack, don't feel bad. Don't beat yourself up. It is so easy to lose track of folks, like Chris said, when they fall out of the news cycle, when they're not still working and they're living a peaceful, quiet life. I know Hefner is gone. He died recently.
Right, yeah. Anybody in the text line, by the way, Chris, anybody chiming in there saying anybody that they know?
A lot of people are saying that, just wanted to point out that Dick Van Dyke was just recently on The Masked Singer, so he's still out there and
seriously
working at some. People are like, Barbara Eden's still alive. I was just looking. I know you're a film fan.
Yeah.
Jack, and a film critic. So Gene Shalit is still alive.
Is he really?
That kind of blew me away.
I just said he was dead. I said he was dead last night. I'm serious. I was talking movies with Frank Summer from MyNorthwest.com, and we're talking about Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
And the new Air movie with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon about the origin of Air Jordan shoes. Got the perfect Rotten Tomatoes score. And I'm thinking, I remember when we used to have real film critics like Sisqel and Eaton.
Wait, there's a biography about the guys that created Air Jordan shoes?
No, it's called Air. And Nike was struggling at the time, and somebody came to Phil Knight and said, "Look, I want to build a shoe around this kid who's not even a pro yet." And they made Air Jordans. Oh, wow. And then how they approached Michael Jordan's family and said, "This is what we want to do." And you know, it's by all counts, it's a brilliant piece of work. But I was saying, you know, Gene Shalit's dead, Siskel and Ebert are dead. We got nobody left. We got to count on Rotten Tomatoes to tell us where to spend our movie money. Yeah. And Gene Shalit is very much alive.
Gene Shalit is currently 96 years old. Wow. He is 96
years old. What a wonderful age, though. I mean, at least I hope for him it's a wonderful time. I mean, I hope he like Dick Van Dyke, is cruising up and down the boulevard in his high-priced car.
There you go. Well, I feel like this is an important topic because there are some moments that, you know, you don't realize. And again, I felt so bad when I found out that Dick Van Dyke was still alive, because I legitimately thought that he had died maybe 10 years ago.
And I believe Julie, I'm not even going to say anymore, I believe Julie Andrews is still with us.
Well, we'll find out when we get back, along with a little bit of news of the world. Some guys escaped from prison, and you will not believe where they ended up. I didn't believe it when I read it. I thought it was a joke, but find out where they went when we get back right after this. Hey, Spike, quick question.
Yeah.
Did you do your taxes yet, my friend? Have you done your taxes?
I have not.
Okay. Why for?
I'm a procrastinator by nature.
So I like to do them as early as possible because I had one, and this is not an ad, by the way, just so people know. This isn't like some lead up to the thing where like, and that's when I called, blah, blah, blah. No, this is just a story. So I had one interaction with the IRS, and I never wanted to do it again. Oh, wow. So that's why I always pay somebody to do my taxes. I never do them by myself. I shell out the $100 to $200 that it costs to have somebody else do my taxes. Thank you very much. Never want to talk to the IRS ever again. So, but I always find it interesting around tax season because I've already got my return. I already, you know, they've already filed. Everything's good to go. But I still hear people haven't done their taxes. And I think, why? You've only got how many days now? You got 4 weeks, 3 weeks to do your taxes, correct?
I've got 26 days, I believe it is, if I'm not somewhere along that line. not that I'm counting the minutes. See, I like to be, I don't, you ever heard the lead cow mentality?
No.
You know, the one cow that wanders out first into the field and, you know, and then what? I want to be in the herd. I want to be on like April 14th. I want to be just like lost in the mix.
Oh, you know, I see.
I want to be when they're overwhelmed and just stamping stuff to get it off their desk. That's when I want to go in.
Okay.
With my ridiculous exemptions of home office work and my unbelievable mileage when I drove to the moon and back on business.
Yeah, well, I actually found out, not to bore people with, you know, talking IRS stuff or whatever, but so I had sold a guitar of mine on the internet through an internet service. And so when I was getting my taxes done, I found out that because I have this quote unquote online store where I have sold things, I got to write off the rest of my guitar's inventory. Isn't that crazy?
You have a business license then, right?
No, but I mean, because I went through the service that they provide, rest of my guitars are just inventory.
Because
I might sell them, but I so I just find that interesting that there's so many things that I didn't know could be a thing when you have somebody else do your taxes, as I have done for many, many years.
I haven't prepared my own taxes in 20 years because when you do what we do, everything about your life is a business expense.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as you have a home office.
Which I do.
Yeah. And so do I. I can show it to you. Everything we do, every movie we rent, every record we buy, every instrument we pick up, part of doing this job.
Yeah, every bag of cat food that I buy for the cat that I take care of, we got to write that off.
He's an emotional support animal. Absolutely, right, exactly. That's a deduction. You bet.
Speaking of writing things off, a couple of guys escaped from jail using a toothbrush in Virginia, and then they decided this is not very big brain. Now, I remember seeing, you know, breakout movies like The Escapist or Shawshank Redemption, right, or Cool Hand Luke, where, you know, you've got these great orchestrated escapes from the man. These guys obviously did not watch those films. Obviously, they did not take Paul Newman's advice into consideration. And so they decided to, rather than book it, get out of Dodge, they decided to go right into an IHOP. So they
IHOP?
They get out of prison. They go down the street, and then they wait until the morning, and then they go, let's get some IHOP. And they go into an IHOP.
You imagine if Andy had done that, crawled through 500 yards of the foulest smelling stench I can only imagine. He's in that stream looking up and goes, I want waffles! And instead of going to the bank in Rhode Island and getting all the money and heading to Zihuatanejo, he stops at the IHOP. And that's where they find him.
They were identified by people in the IHOP because obviously when you escape from prison, the surrounding area is going to have pictures of John Garza and Arlie Nemo. Good, and they're going to say, if you see these two escaped fugitives, please report us. And they're just sitting in an IHOP, enjoying some a pancake with a nice whipped cream smiley face on it with some banana buttons on it.
Oh, yeah, you bet, man. It's flapjack month. Yeah, I know we're going to Mexico, but let's get flapjack month.
Right. And so I'm just thinking to myself, like, when we were talking about the IQ of Americans going down, this is my evidence for that.
See, but... When I was reading, researching this story, I watched Shawshank Redemption to find out how prisons are supposed to be escaped from, what you're supposed to do, so then I can write off that movie. See how this all plays together?
Yeah, no, I 100% see that. So according to the sheriff's department, by the way, the men exploited an unspecified construction design weakness, and with the help of primitive-made tools constructed from a toothbrush and a metal object, they were able to get out of their cells and then find a way through the facility and then out of the facility. So if I had to imagine, they probably got out, you know, from my movie knowledge, they got out through the laundry room, right? Because you got to wheel yourself into the laundry room, and then the guys
hide
come
in a basket.
Hide in a basket, and then you wait for somebody, and then we made it out. But an IHOP, I just think to myself, you're going to go anywhere, maybe somewhere. No offense to IHOP, it's a fine restaurant, but, you know, maybe things is a little bit different than an IHOP, maybe.
Maybe go someplace cops don't eat free. I'm just saying. You know?
Right. Like, maybe don't go at 5 a.m. If I'm a beat cop and I want to have a nice, healthy breakfast.
A little moon over my hammy.
I might be going to the place where cops eat free. All right.